All right, we are continuing our study through the Gospel of Matthew here on the Listener's Commentary. And in this recording, we're going to be looking at Matthew chapter 20, verse 17 through 34. Now, to keep that in context, we need to recall that in the preceding section, Jesus told a parable about a gracious and generous landowner who pays his workers beyond what they actually worked for. Those who worked only 1 hour got paid the same as those who worked for the whole day. They all got an entire day's wage. And that parable illustrates the principle that many who are first will be last, and those who are last will be first. And it shows us that in Jesus' kingdom, things operate differently than in the kingdoms of the world. In fact, Jesus himself is the living, breathing embodiment of this generous, self-giving kind of landowner that we saw in that parable in the preceding section. Well, this next snapshot that we look at in this recording then picks up right at that same point and helps us see the same truth, but maybe from a slightly different angle. So we pick up in Matthew chapter 20, verse 17, and it says, "As Jesus was about to go up to Jerusalem." So they're on their way to Jerusalem for really what will turn out to be Jesus' final Passover. That's why they're going to Jerusalem, for Passover season. And Jesus knows it's going to be his final Passover. He knows what's waiting for him when he gets there. And they're now at Jericho, and they're about ready to climb the long, steep hill through the eastern desert mountains east of Jerusalem, all the way up to the top of the Mount of Olives, and then back down over the hill and into Jerusalem. It's about a 17-mile climb, steep climb uphill. So that's the setting. On their way to Jerusalem for this final Passover, and Jesus took the 12 disciples aside by themselves on the road and said to them. So he's got a whole entourage of people that are making the pilgrimage to Jerusalem for Passover. He's got a bunch of his followers who are following along and part of that entourage. He pulls the 12 disciples aside and he says to them, "Behold, we are going up to Jerusalem, and the Son of Man will be handed over to the chief priests and scribes, and they will condemn him to death. And they will hand him over to the Gentiles to mock and flog and crucify him. And on the third day, he will be raised up." Now, this is the third time Matthew has recorded Jesus' warning to them of what's coming at Jerusalem. So Matthew has been reminding us by including these warnings of what's coming. Jesus has been warning the 12 of what's about to happen. Try to prepare them emotionally and mentally so that it's not like they don't get caught off guard. They're not totally surprised, right? Like, where did that even come from? And so Jesus is preparing them, warning them. Matthew's including it so that as a reader, we hear Jesus knows what's going to happen when he gets there. He knows that he is going to be betrayed. He knows that he's going to be condemned to death. He knows that he's going to be mocked, flogged, and crucified when he gets to Jerusalem. He knows awful, horrendous things await him. He also knows, however, that on the third day, he will rise again. So he knows all this is going to happen. And he doesn't shy away from it. He doesn't, you know, head east out into the desert to hide. He makes this long, difficult climb up to Jerusalem, fully aware of what awaits him when he gets there. And it's in that context where Jesus has just reminded and warned once again the 12 of what awaits him. It's in this context about his self-giving death that lies ahead that the following little snapshot happens. Look at verse 20. "Then the mother of the sons of Zebedee," notice that, James and John's mom is part of the entourage. She's there. In fact, we learn from John's gospel that she's at the foot of the cross. And so she's part of the following band of people that are around Jesus. So the mother of the sons of Zebedee came to Jesus with her sons. So here comes mom. She's got James and she's got John with her. And she bows down in a show of respect and she makes a request of Jesus. What's her request? Jesus said to her, "What do you desire?" And she said to him, "Say that in your kingdom, these two sons of mine shall sit, one on your right, one on your left." In other words, what's she asking for? She's asking for her boys to be given the seats of status, honor, and authority in Jesus' kingdom. She really does believe Jesus is king, and she wants her boys to be given the chief seats in the kingdom. That's what they're wanting. That's what she's wanting for them. And recall that this has been kind of an ongoing problem amongst the disciples. Clear back in chapter 18, verse 1, the disciples came to Jesus and said, "Who's the greatest in the kingdom?" So these young men who have gathered themselves around Jesus have been debating who's better than whom, who's greater than whom, right? And they're all kind of vying for position and status and honor in Jesus' kingdom. And so now the mother of the sons of Zebedee, she joins in and she's making a specific request for her two boys. Here's how Jesus responds in verse 22. But Jesus replied, "You do not know what you're asking. Are you able to drink the cup that I'm about to drink?" And they said to him, "We are able." So notice, Jesus' response bypasses mom at this moment. He looks at James and John, realizing maybe they put mom up to it. At least they're the ones that want this, right? And Jesus says to James and John, "Are you able to drink the cup that I'm about to drink?" And they say, "We're able." What's Jesus getting at? Well, the cup that he's going to drink is the cup of suffering, the cup of self-sacrifice, the cup of death that awaits him in Jerusalem. And full of bravado, James and John are like, "We can do it. We're in with you. We're 100% there." And Jesus said to them in verse 23, "My cup you shall drink. As my followers, being completely identified with me, you're going to suffer. Some of you are going to die. In fact, James, this very James that's the son of Zebedee, will be the first apostle executed, killed for his faith in Jesus. You can read about it in Acts chapter 12. "So my cup you shall drink, but to sit on my right and on my left, to be given those chief seats, is not mine to give, but it's for those for whom it has been prepared by my Father." Notice that even Jesus himself says he has to defer to the Father in this thing. And this is consistent in Jesus' teaching and in the rest of the Bible, that authority is given by God himself, by God the Father. He is the ultimate and the sovereign. And so in this case, Jesus is saying that ultimately it's up to God the Father to determine who is going to have the chief seats in the kingdom. And so these two come. They come with their mom. They make this request of Jesus. They seem to think they're able to drink Jesus' cup, probably because they don't fully understand self-sacrifice and all that's going to be entailed. All they see is glory and power and authority and all of that. And after hearing this, look how the other disciples respond. Verse 24, the other 10 disciples became indignant with the two brothers. They became angry. "What gives you the right? Who makes you think you deserve those seats? Why do you think you're the greatest?" Remember, Jesus has just warned them that he's about to go and to die. And this conversation is now, in that very moment, going on right in that setting, right in that context. And Jesus has been trying to deal with this, as we already mentioned, clear back like in chapter 18. He's trying to remind them, no, you don't get it. Power, status, honor, authority work differently in my kingdom. And they don't see how Jesus' kingdom operates, that it operates completely differently. They're still vying for status and power on the same terms as the world. James and John want the royal treatment for them. Now the others are angry with them about thinking they deserve that, or maybe trying to kind of weasel their way in and get it. So Jesus, verse 25, called them to himself and said, "You know that the rulers of the Gentiles domineer over them, and those in high position exercise authority over them. You know how the kingdoms of the world work in other ways, that the way of the world is control and coercion." That's the idea, domineer over them, control, heavy-handed. You know, they bark out orders, they tell you what to do, control, and exercise authority, coercion. That's the idea. They manipulate, right? There's backroom deals, there's deception, there's half-truths. They strong-arm, they use force and even violence if necessary, all to advance their own agenda and get what they want. That's the way the world works. That's the way power and authority works in the world. You see it in politics. You see it in business. You sometimes see it in families. It's just the way the world works. It's standard operating procedure. But look at verse 26. It's not this way among you. Among you who follow Jesus, among you who know the way of Jesus, you know. Jesus is saying that power and authority, it's still there. It just operates completely differently. It works totally different. And so he says, whoever wants to be prominent among you, the word prominent is the idea of great, right? So whoever wants to be great or prominent among you shall be your servant. And whoever desires to be first among you, keep that in context with where we're at, right? The first shall be last, the last shall be first. Whoever wants to be first among you shall be your slave. Notice the contrast. You want to be great? Become a servant, diakonos, an assistant, one who helps, one who ministers to other. You want to be first? Great. Go to the back of the line, go to the bottom of the heap, and be the slave of all. That's the way Jesus' kingdom works. The way up is down. It's backwards and it's upside down. And then he gives the ultimate example. Remember, he had just warned them what's going to happen to him at Jerusalem. And so he ties this to his own self-giving and self-sacrifice. Look at verse 28. He says, just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. The Son of Man, remember, is an exalted title. It's a royal title growing out of Daniel chapter 7 for the great king that will rule over all the kingdoms of the earth. So it's this high, powerful, exalted title. And Jesus is helping them see that, and yet it means something different than they've ever thought it meant. So the Son of Man didn't come to be served, as all the other kings of the world did, right? To have people wait on him, to get his own way, to push his agenda, to use his position, to line his own pockets and make everything easy for himself. The Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve other people. Whoever wants to become great among you needs to be your servant, just like the Son of Man is great by being a servant. And then he says, and to give his life as a ransom for many, that the ultimate expression of his service is laying down his life for the many. And this phrase, ransom for many, echoes the suffering servant passage out of Isaiah chapter 53, where he is a ransom for many in Isaiah 53. And that's what Jesus is getting at. Isaiah 53:11 reads like this, my servant will justify the many, for he will bear their wrongdoings. That's the pattern, and that's the motivation, and it's embodied in the person of Jesus. So why does power and status and honor operate differently in God's kingdom? Because Jesus went to the cross. Because he gave up his power by giving up his life for us. And so now we see that that's the wisest and best way to use our power and our status. And so we follow suit. Now, in what follows in this little section of the Gospel of Matthew is a specific snapshot, shows up in the other Gospels as well, but the context in which it's said in here is so important for us to pay attention to, because it really seems like this last little snapshot here of chapter 20 is, in a very real sense, a picture of Jesus embodying this self-giving, generous way of life in a very concrete, tangible, down-to-earth, small little way. And that's important for us to see. Obviously, the cross is the big example of self-giving, but the cross was a culmination of a way of life for Jesus, of a bunch of small little acts of self-emptying, self-giving all along the way. And so it helps us realize that, what does it look like to walk the way of the cross? What does it look like to lay down your life for the sake of others? What does it look like to use your power for the good of others rather than to serve yourself? And that's what we see in what follows. So pick up in verse 29, it says, as they were leaving Jericho, so they've gone through Jericho, they're getting ready to make that long, steep climb up to the top of the Mount of Olives, down into Jerusalem. As they were leaving Jericho, a large crowd followed him. So he's got a crowd of people, some of whom are making the trip with him from Galilee, some of whom who have just kind of gathered around there in the city of Jericho. And so being surrounded by all these people, it makes a commotion. There's clearly something going on. And verse 30 tells us, and two people who were blind sitting by the road, hearing that Jesus was passing by. So you have all this people, you have all this ruckus, and they maybe asked somebody, who knows, but they somehow word came to them that Jesus is coming by. And so they cried out, Lord, have mercy on us, Son of David. Son of David is that royal title again, that title of power and authority. It refers to the Messiah, right? The Son of David was going to be the king who sits on the throne. And so they ask him, have mercy on us, Son of David. But the crowd, verse 31, sternly warned them to keep quiet. I mean, he's the Son of David. He doesn't have time for the likes of you. He's on his way to Jerusalem. Passover's about to happen. He's got a long day of climbing ahead of him. You should know that he's on his way to do all of that. So he's got big things to attend to. You be quiet and you shut up. That's the force of it. They're sternly warning these two blind people to be quiet. And yet they didn't stop. They cried out all the more, Lord, Son of David, have mercy on us. And they repeat their request, right? We need help. Take pity on us. Have compassion on us. Verse 32, and Jesus stopped. He stopped. He didn't rush by. He didn't keep going. He didn't ignore these two blind men who were poor, poverty-stricken. They were the last, right? They're at the end of the line. The first shall be last, last shall be first. Well, here's a couple of lasts at the end of the line. And Jesus stopped. And he called them and said, what do you want me to do for you? He, notice, dignifies them with agency rather than domineering over them. He listened to their request rather than assume. He asked, what would you like of me? And so he dignifies them. He stops. He asks them a question. He engages relationally with them. And they said, verse 33, Lord, we want our eyes to be open. And moved with compassion, moved with pity and mercy, Jesus touched their eyes, and immediately they regained their sight and followed him. And so when you put this story connected to the stories that have preceded it, what I think we need to see is this is the way the kingdom of God operates. This is the way Jesus as king operates, with generous, self-giving love. Not by force, not by control, not by making people do what you want, not by having to get your own way, but by giving up yourself for others. And what does it mean to give up yourself for others? Well, it means you give up your time. It means you give up your schedule. It means you give up your preferences. It means you lay down your life for the sake of others. That's the way of Jesus. That's the way of the cross that's going to get played out in real life circumstances. So what happens when the way of the cross, when Jesus, who's on his way to Jerusalem to die, what happens when the cross gets laid over status, honor, and power? Well, what happens is we stop and help blind beggars. We listen. We give ourselves to them and are moved with compassion. It means that we use whatever power we might have or influence we might have for the glory of God and the good of others, not for our own sake. It's the same sort of thing you get in Ephesians chapter 5 when the Apostle Paul says to husbands, husbands, lay down your life for your wife just like Christ laid down his life for you. Power and authority in Jesus' kingdom looks like laying down your life for others. It's the parent who doesn't domineer and control and dominate and serve themselves in the way they interact with their kids. I think of the line from C.S. Lewis who said, I've seen worse bad behavior from parents towards kids sometimes than the other way around. When the cross is laid over status, honor, and power, it affects the way you supervise your employees, the way you relate to your students, the way you treat your neighbors. And all of that means we're doing it in a way that respects their personhood and acts for their good in compassionate, kind-hearted, self-giving sorts of ways. James, John, the other 10 apostles, they all needed to learn this lesson. We who follow Jesus today, we also need to learn this lesson. And so Matthew has recorded these stories here for us to reflect on and to think through. What would it look like in my context to lay the cross over positions of status, honor, or power? We might have very little of that. We might have a lot of that. But in those places where we have any sort of influence or control or power, what does it look like to walk the way of the cross? All right, thanks for tuning into this session on the Listener's Commentary on the New Testament. The Listener's Commentary is only possible because of the generous support of dozens of listeners just like you. So thanks a ton to each and every one of you for your support. And if you want to join the team of supporters, easiest way to do that is to swing over to listenerscommentary.com. Click the Give button. It'll redirect you to a page with World Family Mission, a registered nonprofit, where you can put in a dollar amount. You can even click a box that says Make This Monthly, turn it into a monthly donation, and all those monies then will come my way to help this ministry continue to grow and bear fruit for the sake of Jesus' kingdom. So thanks a ton for your support.